Oh, good evening. Back from Sesshin, back from two ceremonies, lots of people, and a very, very quiet atmosphere, very beautifully held by everyone. Paula did a great job as a shuso, answered the questions with a lot of humor. She's very funny, and she just cut right through in the way. It's a kind of training to be a teacher where you just have to respond to the very moment and not figure everything out beforehand. And if you can survive and do that in front of everybody after having been the wake-up person and the toilet scrubber and all the menial jobs that you get all during the session, then you have to sit up there and answer everybody's Dharma questions. What is the mind? What? Just like that, you have to answer. She did good. There were four of them from San Diego. Dennis came, he'd sewn his roksu, and he took the precepts the day before Paula did her shuso. And David and Laura were there also with Paula and Balin. There were five of them, actually. And they're interested in being a part of floating, the San Diego part of floating Zendo. They've started their own little Zen group, as well as sitting with a Vipassana group. They've decided to do a little Zen on the side, sort of, as floating Zendo, and then come to our sessions. So that's a great addition to us. They're very fine practicers, very fine, all of them. And then we come back and start all over again, which is really nice, really nice. So I was reading Bendoa some more this afternoon and appreciating it again. It's really so cool. I think we stopped on the ninth question, but I'm not 100% sure. Actually, maybe we're not so far along. I have notes on question four. Three and four. And I think I went a little farther last time, but not much. So in question four, he encourages us to completely accept the teaching of doing zazen thoroughly, wholeheartedly, confirming and relying on the Buddha mind, the Buddha mudra, letting go of all affairs, transcending the limits about delusion and enlightenment, not caught up in the dichotomy of different paths, but between ordinary and sacred. And we stroll beyond ordinary thinking. Stroll beyond ordinary thinking. Don't be in a hurry. Receive and use great awakening. Receive and use great awakening. It doesn't say get it. It says receive it. How can the activities of those who are involved in the snares of words and phrases compare with this? So the next question is question 5. Concentration is one of the 3 basic studies. Meditation is one of the 6 paramitas. These are studied by all bodhisattvas from the beginning and practiced regardless of whoever they are or whether they're smart or dumb. So Zazen's already included in those. Meditation is the last one of the paramitas. Meditation is at the end of the last one of the Eightfold Path. It shows up in just about every organized piece of material that we get in Buddhism to practice meditation. And Dogen says, and they say, so it's already included. Why are you saying the true Dharma of the Tathagata is consolidated in this one practice? Why are we making this special? Why is Zazen different from those things? And Dogen says, this question comes because you name as Zen school this great Dharma, this unsurpassed great Dharma of the true Dharma eye treasury. Zen, the title Zen school originated in China and was never heard in India. Bodhidharma sat facing the wall in China, Sorinji Temple in Su Mountain, and nobody knew yet about Buddha's true Dharma and called him a Brahman who practiced Zazen as the essence. But after him, after all that, all the ancestors for each generation practiced Zazen also. Seeing this, foolish people, worldly people who didn't understand the reality, called this the Zazen school. Nowadays they call it Za. They drop the Za, which means sitting, and just call it the Zen school. Don't consider Zazen to be the concentration and meditation of the 6 paramitas and the 3 basic studies. The intention of Buddha to transmit this Buddha Dharma is revealed in his own life. It is useless to doubt the truth that Buddha transmitted solely to Venerable Mahakashapa the unsurpassed great Dharma of the true Dharma eye, passing it on by lifting a flower in silence, and Mahakashapa receiving it in silence with a smile. It's really a remarkable story. But it happens to us. If we know someone well or feel in sync with someone, we don't have to say. We can just nod and smile and recognize a truth. Yes, we get it. Yeah, it's here. It's here. He says nothing can compare with it. So question 6, very short. Why does Buddhism encouraging encourage entering realization through meditation only in sitting among the four different postures. Only in sitting among the four different postures of walking, standing, sitting, and lying down. Why only sitting? Dogen says, if you seek a reason, you must know that it's only because sitting is what's been used by Buddhist practitioners. They've always been doing it that way. And he quotes Nagarjuna as saying, Zazen itself is the Dharma gate of ease and delight. He says, so we could say that sitting is the most stable and peaceful of the four postures. All Buddha's ancestors follow this path. And having tried all of those practices, sitting, standing, walking, and lying down, as a number of us have, sometimes we stand for a long time. That's a wonderful practice, standing meditation. And sometimes when our back is in terrible shape, lying down is a very fine way of sitting. And we do walking meditation, always. It's how we can sustain our sitting practice. But sitting on the ground is by far the most merciful way, almost, you could say. It is certainly very stable and grounded. And even though it's almost impossible for us who didn't grow up that on the ground, on the floor, to do a full lotus, even the Burmese position keeps us on the ground in a wonderful way, in a very stable way. Sitting in a chair is not so stable. Sitting in a chair is a bigger challenge. I always say it's like a piece of grass wavering in the wind. Try really, really hard to keep grounded. But it means connecting the sit bones, being very aware of where the sit bones are and where the feet are, because that's the only real connection that you have. Otherwise, you're in the air. And yet it works. It works. You can sit a whole session all day and all night in a chair, which is wonderful. So question 7, they go on to say, as for the practice of Zazen, people who haven't realized Buddha Dharma should attain enlightenment through practicing the way of Zazen, but what could those who already have clarified the true Buddha Dharma expect from doing Zazen? Like, if you're sitting and you get enlightened, then why are you continuing? Aren't you sitting to get enlightened? And then enlightened just sticks on you and you go on with your life in an enlightened way. And Dogen says, although it is said not to relate dreams to fools, and it is useless to give oars to mountain people, I'll give you further instruction. A little sharp. Thinking that practice and enlightenment are not one is no more than a view that is outside the way. In Buddha Dharma, practice and enlightenment are one and the same. Because it is the practice of enlightenment, a beginner's wholehearted practice of the way is exactly the totality of original enlightenment. For this reason, in giving instruction, the essential attitude for practice, it is taught not to wait for enlightenment outside of practice. Practice is directly indicating original enlightenment. Sitting itself is enlightenment itself. Since it's already enlightenment of practice, enlightenment is boundless, endless. Since it's the practice of enlightenment, practice is beginningless. Just here, there is practice, not separate from enlightenment. Fortunately, each one of us individually inherited this wondrous original realization in the realm of the unconstructed. It's not just for special people. It's not for them over there. It's each one of us. Each one of anybody. Any beginner. Any long term. Anyone fresh and new and we're in the world and life. Anyone old. Anyone dying. Same, same. Practice and enlightenment. Fortunately for us, he says, this wholehearted engaging the way with beginner's mind, which transmits the undivided wondrous practice, is exactly attaining undivided original enlightenment in the ground of non-fabrication. No making it up. In order to not allow defilement inseparable from practice, the Buddha ancestors vigilantly teach not to slacken practice. When wondrous practice is cast off, original enlightenment fills our hands. When we are free from original enlightenment, wondrous practice is carried out through the whole body. This is very mysterious. But what it's pointing to is thinking about it. Doesn't work. So either way that our mind goes, we can't conceive it. We can't invent it or pretend it. It's already from the beginning. Each beginner's endeavor of the way brings forth original realization in the realm of the unconstructed. And he quotes a very ancient teacher who said, it's not that there is no practice and enlightenment, but only that it cannot be defiled or divided. It can't be touched. And it was also said, a person who sees the way practices the way. Dogen says, you should know that you must practice in the midst of attaining the way. So, that gets us to number 8. So why don't we stop there? And there are questions?
You were reading a minute ago about the sort of unsurpassed, pure enlightenment of practice, as he sort of put it. It was crossing my mind, is there really a difference, or is it just sort of the use of words between that reference to all beings having the Buddha nature? Is it really kind of the same thing that he was talking about, that you don't have to be special and all of that?
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of along the same lines.
Yes. In fact, he goes on to clarify that a few questions later when he talks about the Seneca heresy, he calls it. So we'll probably talk about that next week. Yeah.
I am confused, but he says in one sentence that we shouldn't slacken practice in order not to allow defilement of enlightenment, and then he says that there is no, that it cannot be defiled. So they're both true.
Yeah.
Okay.
It has to be that way.
In your practice, Angie, how often do you questions come up for you? And when they do, I mean, you've been practicing for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Do you like have a system that you, or like a file system where you put on? How often do things come to you, or do you hash them out with one of your friends, or just curious?
You mean in terms of ordinary life?
Well, first of the Dharma, with the Dharma.
With the Dharma.
And then with personal life, because supposedly it's supposed to help us live our life, right?
Yes.
The practice, make it possible. Semi-decent way. It does help, I think.
It certainly does.
And, how often do those questions come up, and have they lessened? Is that a word?
Yeah, it is a word. I've always sat every day. When I first started sitting, I'd just take a pillow off the bed and sit on it. But eventually I got brave and bought a pillow. No, I made one. So I've always done that. Almost 40 years now, I've just been sitting every morning, mostly. And otherwise, I don't know how to characterize it, Samya. I mean, I get stuck. I get real stuck in certain ways. Stuck in relationships, especially family ones, but friends also. and hard decisions to make. I'm always wrestling with the question of time, how to spend my time in the most useful and nourishing way, nourishing for others and myself both. It's always a problem. And I keep going back to the Dharma. I go back to Dogen and to Uchiyama, the new guys as well as the old guys. And I'm inspired by them and struck by the truth that they speak. And I just feel like I'm in love with the truth. It always thrilled me that people were able and wanted to talk about it and to experience it. And that's how I got into this, because it was such a remarkable thing to meet Suzuki Roshi, who was able to express what I had always wondered about and hoped to meet sometime. Someone who responded to truth is a funny word, but responded to that deep sense of meaning in our life, way beyond the superficial, way beyond the getting and spending and the wanting and not wanting and all of that. And it's still, when I get all messed up, I sit down and sometimes I read something, but I always sit with it until I get clear again. So it's not a thing that's all organized, because life is too chaotic for that, but just trying to be able to respond to whatever happens in the best way, in the most clear and loving way, as far as that can go. But I read the part in Uchiyama Roshi in the back of this book where he talks about how what a mess his life was. He knew he was never going to paradise when he died. And I thought, oh yeah, me too. You know, I don't think we can aim for perfection. It doesn't happen. But we can aim for the truth. And we can cultivate a loving mind and a loving heart. I think that's all we can do, really.
It's interesting what you said about how you were struck by meeting Suzuki Roshi.
Mm-hmm.
And it just seems, you know, that the study of the word or the Dharma or whatever you want to call it is pretty powerful, but seeing it come through a human being, to me, it just drives it home.
Yes.
And I don't know what it is. I don't know. It just seems like it works so well that way when you see it through a human being.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a good note to stop on. Thank you.